Good evening. Go ahead and open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 1. Be reading from there this evening. Daniel chapter 1. In your refrigerator, you will find on the side of your milk jugs, grade A pasteurized, homogenized milk. Do you know what those words mean? If you go back to your some of your classes in biology and other things, you might remember some of that. Those of you old enough to remember, though, the days before pasteurization and homogenization certainly probably understand what those mean. How many of you can remember going to the supermarket and having a choice between pasteurized and non-pasteurized milk? How about having the choice between homogenized and non-homogenized milk at some time in your past? You know, pasteurization has to do with heating the milk to a certain temperature and holding it there until harmful effects or, bacteria and other things are killed before the days of pasteurization. Occasionally, I don't think it was a real common occurrence, but occasionally a person might get very ill and possibly even die from drinking milk. Homogenization is the process of mixing up the milk until it is uniform in consistency. We might say it has been fully blended. And you can always recognize non-homogenized milk because the cream separates and comes to the top, right? Some of you can probably still remember as a child, your mother getting the milk from the milkman on the front step, going out and getting that and scooping off the cream off the top. And when you got enough, she put it in the churn and made some butter, right? Some of you might be able to remember that. A lot of you will not be able to remember such things. But we understand what has been happening here. It has now been whipped down into the milk. Well, we need to see that homogenization is exactly what the world wants to do with Christians. The world wants to shake us up and blend us so effectively that there is no longer any difference between us and them. That you don't, there is no separation. It's all just one big mix. And that's what they want us to be. That's what they want us to do, and that is their goal. You know, the cream no longer comes to the top. It no longer is a separate substance. But once you have been a Christian for a while, you realize that while that may be what the world wants around you, that certainly is not what God wants from you. You know, He doesn't want the cream so mixed up that the rest of the milk that there is no difference. He wants us to resist the homogenization of the world. And yet, staying with our analogy, He hasn't called us to leave the milk bottle either, has He? We are in the world while not of the world, as we say. In our day, there is no small assignment, or this is no small assignment. But then again, it never has been. I mean, even when we look back to the Israelites, right? Problem was, they began to mix with the pagans that they allowed to remain in the land when God said drive them all out, and they didn't. Then they began to mix with them and became very much like them. And as a result, God was displeased, and as a result, they were punished by God numerous times. So how do you pull something off like preventing yourself from being homogenized in our society? You have to be resolved. You have to resolve to be resolved, as the title of the lesson is tonight. We talk about resolutions at this time of year, and to resolve something is to decide firmly on a course of action. Now, I know there's a lot of resolutions that we decide on that I'm not so sure it's a firm decision. You know, we kind of decide, well, I'd like to be in better shape, I'd like to do this, or I'd like to do that. And you know, gyms make a lot of money in January. You ever heard about that? I've talked to people that are very active in gyms. And, you know, I'm not. And so they tell me, they say, I don't even go in January because you got all these people in there for their New Year's resolution. He said, I just go back in February, and in February everybody's gone. And so, you know, there's some decisions or resolutions we make that maybe are not so firm as they are, I'd like to do that, but I'm not really sure I have the conviction to see that through. But if we are to be resolved, to be resolved about something, to have a resolution, is to make a firm decision and not move from there. You know, one way that the world tries to to stop us from being resolved is through compromise. You know, compromise is the most common and straightforward means used by the world in order to homogenize or to blend us in with them that they use. It is one of their primary tools. They want us to compromise on so many things, do they not? Compromise on absolute truth. They want that. There can't be just one truth. In an age of political correctness and subjectivity to everything, you know, what's true for you may not be true for me. So let's compromise and find something in the middle. That there's some good things that, yes, are probably true most of the time, but there isn't just one truth. They want us to compromise on biblical inspiration. Well, come on, you really think God wrote that book? Can't we just say that God kind of had a hand in it, but it's not really just word for word plenary inspiration that God has given us exactly what He wants for us? Some people want us to compromise on the one church. That's awful arrogant to think that you're the only church. Or maybe on the one way. Compromise on that. As Oprah said a few years ago, with all the millions of people that live up on this earth, are you seriously telling me you think there's only one way for them to get to heaven? Yes, Oprah. I'm not saying that, but Jesus Christ said that. John chapter 14 and verse 6. People want us to compromise on worship. I'd like to come to your church, but can y'all not pep it up just a little bit, right? Give me a show. I'm going to have to pay to be here. Might as well get a show out of it, right? Compromise just a little bit. I'm not asking you to just completely do away with what you do, but give me something too. They want us to compromise on sin. Some things aren't wrong. Let's not call these things wrong. These people, they love each other, or these people really enjoy that, or that's a big part of their life. Can't we just say they're okay? Compromise with us. And it is shockingly sad to see how many Christians and how many churches are compromising and homogenizing themselves with the world. You know, you just name anything right and good and the world's going to try to compromise it away in some way. American Heritage Dictionary gives us the third definition under the word compromise: a concession to something detrimental. You know, if you can be made to abandon key aspects of your faith by compromising what you believe, homogenization is simple and will soon be complete for you. We can see the same call to compromise in Daniel chapter 1 here. And it begins with the military defeat of what remained of the once powerful nation of Judah and the people there in Jerusalem being taken captive and carried off to Babylon. And the year is 606. B.C. In verses 1 through 4 it says, "In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and other nobles, youths in whom was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and who had ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans." The policy of taking the youngest and the strongest among survivors in a defeated nation was a common policy during this time. It ensured a good flow of slaves for the conquering king, not only for his service, but also to sell. But it also ensured that it would be very difficult, having taken all the young men and all the people of talent and ability out of the country, and make it very hard for them to rebel. Make it very hard for them to field an army of young men if you have already taken them all into captivity. And so this is pretty common among conquerors of that day. You taking the younger captives ensured that also that they were much easier to re-socialize. They were still of an impressionable age where you could take them and completely change the way they think. I remember back When I was growing up and it was the Cold War, I know a lot of young people these days have no idea about that and things that were going on and things that we thought were, you know, possibilities in the future. But, you know, one of those things was always, you know, if Russia took us over, they'd put us in all these resocialization camps, right, where they would reprogram us. I remember people talking about that. But that's exactly what the Babylonians are doing. They're going to reprogram them. They're going to resocialize them into a pagan culture. They're going to homogenize them. And that's what the cultures did back then. Well, Ashpenaz, we see here, it says the chief of his officials can also be translated as the chief of his of the eunuchs. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that he was a eunuch or that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, or Azariah became eunuchs. Some have defined it as chief of the officials as being a court official, someone who took care of the king's business immediately around the king, maybe even took care of the things that took place in the palace, sort of like, I guess, our presidential chief of staff today. But he also may have just, he may have been the man that was simply put in charge of re-educating these boys. You know, the king ordered for Ashpenaz to bring some of the young men of Israel to serve in his court. He gave qualifications to Ashpenaz to follow. And, you know, it's interesting because if we look at these qualifications, we find out some things about Daniel, don't we? And Mishael and Azariah and Hananiah. And the kind of men that they were before they even entered this training. Well, it says that they had to be royalty or of nobility. And so they were a part of the royal families of Judah. That would have put them somewhere in the lineages of David to some degree. Not necessarily in the lineage of Christ. We don't see them in that lineage. But in the lineage of David, to be noble or to be a noble or a royal person in Judah would require that. Also, we see this is the fulfillment of God's prophecy through Isaiah to Hezekiah. When Hezekiah brought the Babylonians in and got all prideful of what he had and decided to just show them everything. And God condemned him for having done that and said there will come a day when sons that come forth from you will be taken by them and serve in their palace. So this is the fulfillment of that prophecy that we see with Hezekiah. They were as well to be young. They were to have no defect, no physical deformities or health problems. And this may be best defined by the Bible itself in Leviticus chapter 21. In verses 17 through 21, it says, "Speak to Aaron, saying, no man of your offspring throughout their generations who has a defect shall approach to... who has a defect shall approach a blind man or a lame man or he who has a disfigured face or any deformed limb or a man who has a broken foot or hand or a hunchback or a dwarf or one who has defect in his eye or eczema or scabs or crushed testicles. No man among the descendants of Aaron, the priest who has a defect, is to come near to offer the Lord's offering by fire. Since he has a defect, he shall not come near to offer the food of his God." So there is kind of a definition of defect as the Bible would have defined it, or God would have defined it. Also, they were to be good looking. They were to show intelligence in every branch of wisdom. They were to be endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge. And they were to have the ability to serve. Now, training of Persian youth began at age 14. And ended at age 17. Therefore, we can assume that Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah were around 14 to 15 years old when their education began. These guys are young. You know, these guys are they'd be in our youth group if they were here. These are not, you know, sometimes I think we get this idea of Daniel being an older man, but he is a 14 or 15 year old boy. And I think sometimes we kind of hold that. So even when he's in the lion's den, when there he's probably 80 or 90 years old, you know. But Daniel really spans the years. But, you know, these are young guys. And they're in a very difficult situation. They've been taken from their home. It's not pleasant. It's not easy. And yet we're going to see a fortitude in them, a resolve in them that we need to emulate. The next verses describe the plan for resocialization. And it was quite clear and out in the open effort to homogenize these men. Verses 5 through 7 says, "The king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service.
Now among them, from the sons of Judah, were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them. And to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. You know, the training was to indoctrinate these young men in the ways of Babylon. They were trying to make them conform to Babylonian ways. They wanted them to speak their language. You know, the Babylonians spoke Aramaic, which was a form of Hebrew. They were to eat their food. They wanted them to take on the names of Babylonians. And they later, in chapter 3, we see that they wanted them to worship their gods. See how the progression goes? See, we have to get over to chapter 3 before they actually go that far. When Nebuchadnezzar builds his image, right? So there everybody is to worship this image. But these three men, that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they do not do that at that time. Well, we are introduced at this time to these four characters in the book, primary characters in the book of Daniel. They're Jewish names. I want us to think about their names and what they were and what they became so that we understand how that might have been an insult for them to bear. The end of each of these Jewish names is important. They either end with El, which is the word for God. When we think about Bethel, that word means house of God. So they either had that L on the end of their words, or they ended with Yah, which is an abbreviated form of Yahweh, the personal name of God. So these guys' names, their Jewish names, were very centered and focused upon God. And we look at Daniel, we see that means God is my judge. Hananiah is Jehovah, or Yahweh has been gracious. Mishael is who is God. And Azariah is Jehovah has helped. So all of their names had to do with God. Their names were changed into pagan names by the Babylonians. Belteshazzar means Bel, protect his life. Bel was a Babylonian god. Bel meant Lord, and this referred to the chief deity of Babylon, Marduk. So Daniel's name was chosen to honor Marduk. Then we see Shadrach means the command of Aku, the moon god of Babylon. Meshach is who is what Aku is. Same Aku as the word before. Abednego is servant of Nebo. Nebo was considered to be the son of Marduk. So, you know, here you've got godly men that have been given pagan names, right? Imagine if somebody out there wanted to give you a name that honored some pagan god. How happy would you be with that? How much would you want that to take place for you? But yet they had no choice here. And besides a new home, these captive boys were given a new education, a new diet, a new goal for their lives, and new names, all of which were apparently tolerable to these four young men, except for one, right? They were willing to be taken away. They were willing to do a lot of these things, even have their names changed. But there was one thing that these young men were not going to do, and that had to do with the food. The food from the king's table. Being raised in a Hebrew home, these men understood that there were things that God in the law of Moses had forbade them to eat, right? There were things that they were not allowed to eat at any time for any reason. And these would have been things that would have shown up on the Babylonian table. Also, to drink wine from the king's table is to fellowship yourself with him and his gods. And they were not going to do that either. And so we see that they were not going to eat of these unclean things. Daniel and his friends were not going to compromise their loyalty to the law of God. Verse 8 says, "But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself." So Daniel decided after reviewing the king's edict that he would not allow himself to become a grade A pasteurized, homogenized pagan, right? He was going to stay a servant of God. Next verses describe what he did. It says, "Now God granted Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the commander of the officials. And the commander of the officials said to Daniel, I am afraid of my lord king who has appointed your food and your drink, for why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you would make me forfeit my head to the king. Daniel said to the overseer whom the commander of the officials had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days, and let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and the appearance of the youths who were eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. So God was with Daniel and his friends. He gave them this hearing with this official so that they might have the opportunity to do this test. I want you to take note of something. The world thinks it's very smart, doesn't it? I mean, this guy, it's a foregone conclusion in his mind that they're not going to look very good at the end of these days, right? Well, yeah, you know, you're going to look all haggard. You're not going to look good. You've got to be eating the good stuff over here. It's the best stuff for you. And the world tells us those same things, right? You people can't hold those views. You can't think like that. That doesn't make for good society. That doesn't make for good people. You're just making people upset and angry and causing people to hate. The world thinks it knows so much, but it doesn't know God. And that's where it fails miserably. So these 10 days are granted to Daniel and his friends. Verses 15 and 16, at the end of the 10 days, their appearance seemed better, and they were fatter than all the youths who had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and kept giving them vegetables. You know, the blessing of God didn't stop there. Their appearance was not just equal to the others. It was better. They were far better than the other men that were in this education program. In verses 17 through 21, we see that they, after those years of being trained, they enter into the service of the king. And in fact, Daniel, at a very young age, is going to impress Nebuchadnezzar. At a very young age, he's actually going to end up being the ruler over the Babylonian province that Babylon set in. I'm sure that didn't sit well with a lot of older men, that a teenager was basically ruling over them in that area. But they are now 17 years old as we come to the end of this story in verses 17 through 21. So they far exceeded all others, the Bible tells us, in the kingdom and wisdom. And we see clearly in these passages a call for the world from the world to compromise. And it is no different in principle than the world's call for God's people to compromise in any other age, including our age today. Yes, the circumstances are usually different, but the issue is always the same. Someone has written, compromise is always wrong when it sacrifices principle. You know, I guess somewhere in politics, in the compromise of politics, you know, compromise is a requirement in politics, but I think what happens to a lot of people in politics is they begin to compromise principle. Once they do that, it's a terrible journey into a land of no principles, if you're willing to give them up. Not all compromise is wrong, though. There are times when compromise is permissible. There are times when compromise is even desirable. Remember the dictionary definition of compromise: a concession to something detrimental. Note that Daniel and his friends didn't object to the classes that they had to sit through. They would have had to listen to all the pagan stories. They had to learn about all the pagan gods, things that they have no interest in, right? You know, I hated certain subjects in school, and Brother Gene, I wasn't a very good student on those subjects because I didn't do what I should have. But, you know, imagine having to sit and listen to classes on pagan gods. And them literally trying to indoctrinate you with those things. But they were willing to do that. They were willing to change their names. They were willing to do a lot of things. They made a lot of compromises, but they wouldn't compromise that which violated God's will. They stood firm when it came to that. That concession could not be made. Why? Because it was detrimental to them being God's people. Look back at verse 8. It says, "But Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank." You know, the words to note there are those that are translated "made up his mind." It's a Hebrew phrase. The Hebrew word behind that phrase was one that was often used in reference to making a rope. Taking a bunch of different strands, putting them all together individually, not very strong. But all those strands put together and twisted together became something that was nearly unbreakable. And so literally the word made up his mind there for Daniel has that same thought. That Daniel took all the strands of his resolve in his life and twisted them up into something that was unbreakable. And said, "I will not eat of this food." You know, he had resolved himself to that. He had made a determination that he would not move. Folks, we need to take those things that are right, those things that are good, those things that are true, those things that are godly. We need to make up our minds like Daniel did. We need to draw that line in the sand this far, no further, and stand firm. Resolved as Daniel was. Imagine that. 14 years old. I think we need to consider that for just a moment. I guess my mic has died. I have some kind of adverse effect to these mics. I suck all the battery power. They say I yell too much. But think about being 14 years old. You're in a foreign kingdom, in a place where they can kill you and it doesn't really matter to them. You're nothing. And you're going to stand and tell the king you're not going to do it. Imagine having that kind of resolve at 15 years old. That's what Daniel had. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego had that as well. Now, after Daniel determined that this was an issue for which there could be no compromise, he gathered that every strand up and he made the stand. And God blessed him for it. Folks, God will bless us if we make these stands. The world might hate us. They hated my Lord, so I don't get too worried about that one. I want God's blessing. I can't please the world. I don't know anybody can please the world, and people that try just wear themselves out. But I can please God. So I want to do that. You know, a big reason why many compromise, even when they don't want to, is that they never come to this kind of decision. They never make this kind of, have this kind of resolve in their lives. They know something is wrong, but they beat around the bush, hoping the unpleasant decision will somehow go away, or perhaps they try to somehow accommodate the best of both worlds. It reminds me of the guy that Paul Harvey described one time. His words were that there was a uncertain soldier in the Civil War who figured he'd play it safe and wear gray pants and a blue coat. Got shot from both directions. I guess nobody could figure out what he was. You know, the world's not looking for compromise from it. They want what they want. Let's stand. Let's stand for what we know to be right and true. President Ronald Reagan once said that he had learned the need for a resolute decision early in life. He had an aunt take him to a cobbler to have a pair of shoes made. That's almost inconceivable to us today, right? How many have went to the cobbler in this room? He says the shoemaker asked young Ronald, "Do you want a square toe or a round toe?" And Reagan just kind of hemmed and hawed around, couldn't really decide. So the cobbler said, "Come back in a day or two and let me know what you want." And a few days later, the cobbler saw Reagan and he said, "Son, have you decided what you want?" He said, I don't know. And so the cobbler said, "Okay." And so he got his shoes. And one shoe was round and one shoe was square. He said, "I learned right there to make a decision, to be resolute about what I wanted and what I wanted to do." You know, when it comes to issues of compromise, issues where principles of faith are involved, like Daniel here, we need to be resolute. We need to make up our minds, and if we don't, we'll soon be homogenized, and we will be no different from the world. And folks, if we as the Lord's church, if we as Christians in God's family, if we're no different than the world out there, we have nothing to offer them. They might as well go anywhere they want to go. They might as well do anything they want to do because we have nothing to give them if we're not unique. If we don't believe in something that's unique, if we're not convicted in it. An interesting thing to watch from the window of a plane is the winding paths of rivers below you. You know, no two waterways are alike, but they all have one thing in common. They're all crooked. No such thing as a straight river. If you see a straight river, it's a canal, right? It's been man-made. No such thing as a straight river. They're all crooked, and there's a reason they're crooked. It's because a river, as it flows, takes the path of least resistance. And because of that, it's crooked. Folks, if we go through this life and we simply take the path of least resistance, we too will be crooked. We will not go on a straight path to God. We will meander all around the world. Because let me tell you, to be people of faith is hard. And it takes conviction. And it takes making up our minds, being resolved to live for God with all of our might. No matter what the world may threaten, no matter what the world may want, you know, we too can become crooked if we always take that easy way out. The resolve of Daniel is not easy, but it takes courage, conviction, and commitment. But if we practice it, it will yield a life that has a straight direction. We know where we're going. I don't have to guess. I don't have to wonder. I know. I know the end path. I know the direction. I know where it's heading. And there's peace to that. And there's joy to that. You know, Daniel endured the things that he endured. Because for Daniel, he knew where the path was leading, didn't he? It didn't matter what Nebuchadnezzar did. Didn't matter what Belshazzar did. Later, it doesn't matter what Darius does, right? Daniel's path was always in one direction, in one direction only. Hard, easy, whatever. Daniel was on the same path. May we be those kind of people as we go into 2014. And we are people resolved to live for God and not be like the world. For we do not want to be like them, because John says, love not the world nor the things of the world, for those things are passing away. Hold to that which lasts. This evening, if you're not a child of God, we hope and pray that you make the resolute decision to give your life to Christ. We want to help you with that. If you need to know about what you need to do, then please ask us. We'd love to help you. For those of you that have studied those things and do understand, maybe you haven't made the decision, we want to pray that you'll make the decision tonight to believe in Jesus Christ, to repent of your sins, to confess Jesus as the Son of God, and be buried in baptism. If you're a child of God, maybe you haven't been very resolved. Maybe you've been compromising far too much. Maybe you haven't been convicted like Daniel. Maybe you have compromise detrimental things. Stop. Stand firm. Take every strand of your resolve in your life and twist it together for God. And stand. If we can help you with that, if we can pray for you and assist you, we want to do that. Won't you come as we stand, as we sing?